this is. So you bite on a towel, hope it won't hurt too bad. A Stranger Things fanfic, written by Misty Sharks and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated R and contains the pairings Steve Harrington, Eddie Munson, Chrissy Cunningham, Eddie Munson, Chrissy Cunningham, Steve Harrington, Chrissy Cunningham, Steve Harrington, Eddie Munson. With additional tags for graphic depictions of violence, vampire Eddie Munson, vampire Chrissy Cunningham, bisexual Eddie Munson, bisexual Steve Harrington, slow burn, kind of, BDSM vibes, everyone's a switch because I say so, vampires, flirting by talking about mutual crushes on other people, blood drinking, blood play, but like the supernatural kind. No, Beta, I'm not letting anyone I know read this filth. Rated for violence and suggestive situations. And, you know, the blood stuff. Polyamory. This story is part 3 of the series, Monsters That Talk, Monsters That Walk the Earth. Author's notes. Trigger warnings for violence and blood play. Whoa, okay. This one is a long one. Hopefully it'll make up for the wait. Thank you so much for everyone who read and commented on the previous parts. I was really unsure if it was good enough to keep going with, but you guys got me convinced. Heart. Oh, and if you read the last part in the early days, sorry, I kind of went back and edited some stuff. It's overall the same, just a little less clunky. Also, this one is probably kinkier than you are used to from me. Whoops. If you know me in real life, yeah, no you don't. Certain facts, stripes and flags, singles abs. Run you hot, cold like a rheostat. I mean a thermostat, so you bite on it. Hope it won't hurt too bad. That night, after Steve's headed home for a couple of hours of sleep, and Eddie's finally given in to the need for a shower, Chrissy finds herself alone with her thoughts. Body a little restless, mind a little scattered, she goes to lie down on Eddie's bed, letting his lingering scent envelop her. On the bedside table, the digital clock silently ticks its way closer to midnight. It's been 24 hours now, she realizes, since her life was truly irrevocably turned upside down. It's crazy, she thinks, how quickly someone's world can tilt completely on its axis. How Steve, previously just some guy she had kind of known, had become a trusted ally in only a matter of hours. How Eddie, who had been barely more than a memory half forgotten, could now represent something so close to the feeling of home. They had spent the afternoon planning. Several ideas, considered and discarded, interspersed with a few experiments related to the nature of their current forms. Questioning things like, can they still eat food? Eddie, yes. Chrissy, not really. Can they see in the dark? Not completely, but better than before. And who's the strongest? Chrissy. Mostly, they had gone over the risks of who to tell and who to avoid. Eddie, ever distrusting of governmental bodies and authority figures, vetoes the number on Steve's offered business card almost right away. There's a history there of foster homes, of people falling through the cracks in the system that Chrissy doesn't know the details of. She'd made a mental note to ask when things are not so new. Eventually, some decisions had been made, and Steve had gone to make a couple of calls on the yellowing old phone attached to the living room wall. The first, he had dialed with such apprehension, both her and Eddie had shared a look of concern. At least until they heard him say quietly into the receiver, "Hi, Nance. It's me." The Harrington-Wheeler breakup had been the talk of the town back in the day, so of course Chrissy had heard all about it. She'd even been to that infamous party, seeing Steve's face as he stormed out, eyebrows drawn and eyes a little red. That had been the first time she'd wondered if maybe there was more to King Steve than meets the eye. In the end, Steve's quarrel with Nancy had been short. Clearly a little stilted based on their shared history, but professional in the face of possible danger. When her voice, tentative, asked if Steve wanted her to come over to help, there had been a moment where Chrissy had expected him to say yes, to take that offered olive branch. But in the end, he'd only hesitated a moment before shaking his head, mouth pulled into what was almost a smile. "I'll let you know when we know more," is all he had said, shoulders a little slumped as he hung up. The second phone call, made to the number Nancy had provided, was far more odd. It had started with suspicion. "Who are you? Where did you get this number?" And after Steve had gone over the basics of their situation, during which there was the clear, telltale sound of someone pouring themselves a drink, to sarcasm. "Oh, no. When I was asking for a sample, I clearly meant of your parents' Sauvignon Blanc. Come on, kid, a blood sample. And some of that mold moonshine, too." To slight panic, as he realized they no longer had the bottle. Steve, are you seriously telling me that this shit is still out there on the black market, ready for fucking consumption? After finally hanging up with a, "Don't call me from this phone again. I'll communicate through Wheeler, who seems to be the only one in your age group with some actual sense," Steve had looked a little like he'd just been bulldozed. But at least now they had a clear objective. Tomorrow, they are going to pay Mikey the amateur chemist a visit. Right now, though, as she watches the lone glow-in-the-dark star stuck to the ceiling above Eddie's bed, Chrissy allows her mind to wander. Her senses are so different now. Though overwhelming at first, once the smell of blood and cold sweat had dissipated, everything else had rushed in, and so much of it was good. She had never known that during cold winter evenings like this, when the temperature drops just below freezing, the whole world is filled with little tapping noises as the water molecules turn hard and sharp. Hadn't seen the glimmer of thousands of tiny light refractions hitting each surface as the frost grew. Inside the trailer, the space heaters have kicked on, the generator out back coughing to life with a soft hum. When she breathes in, the smell of lightly singed dust fills her lungs as the space slowly heats, intermingling with the already there scent of the cheap off-brand detergent and the unmistakable scent of Eddie that still clings to her borrowed clothes. It's intoxicating. And there's another part of it, too. She hasn't shared this one with the boys, partly because it's a little embarrassing, and partly because she likes it a little too much. It had been a slow realization during the course of the day that what she could smell on Eddie wasn't just weed and sweat and ink, that Steve didn't just smell of hairspray and motor oil and expensive body wash. Underneath, there were smells not related to the physicality of their bodies, but rather the thoughts and feelings lingering just below the skin. There was the smell, much like cinnamon and rough leather, proof of Eddie's loyalty and fierce protectiveness for her. The sharp notes of lemongrass and rusted metal, proof that Steve was nervous and a little afraid, despite his attempts at outward calm. As these sensations and their meanings made themselves known to her, she felt powerful, like the whole world's secrets were opening up in front of her. After so many years second-guessing what people thought of her, always worried that she'd messed up, said the wrong thing, being able to sense the emotional response to her words the moment they left her lips, it's incredible. Maybe if she had been in different company when she discovered it, she would think of it as a curse. Shudders to think what disdain her mother would emanate, what apathy her father would possess. Instead, here she is, with Eddie Munson, the once cute kid with a buzz cut turned charismatic drug dealer metalhead with a soft spot for a girl in trouble, bursting with loyalty to someone he hardly knows. And Steve, dethroned king of Hawkins High that she used to sneak looks at during practice, gossip about with her friends, filled with a lot more insecurity than he ever showed, overshadowed only by the true, passionate though begrudging, way he just cares. She thinks that, with some time and practice, she could pluck at any of these threads, prod at every insecurity until it snaps. She could break them, she thinks, without even touching a hair on their heads. She doesn't want to, not at all, but knowing that she could? It feels good to be the one holding all the cards for once. That's all. So, she had used it to her advantage. Had looked Steve in the eye and told him the truth when she could sense that he'd accept no less. Has held on to Eddie's hand when she knew he needed the reassurance to calm down, to accept the help that they needed. Both very necessary, justified uses for her new ability. Only, there was more, wasn't there? Because under the kaleidoscope of emotions that rush out of Eddie at any given moment, there is a heat that sometimes flares up. Hot air hitting her like out of a furnace, rushing through her, causing her to shiver from anything but the cold. And she knows it has something to do with pushing him down and holding him there. And then there is Steve, whose feelings were so straightforward they had almost knocked her back with the force of their honesty. Steve, who had been intrigued, been interested, though embarrassed, as he took in the shape of her. And, oh God, she had flirted with him, hadn't she? He had just looked so earnest, so careful and gentle, and then underneath she had felt his attraction. Had felt it simmering in the air around them, and then Eddie had returned, stopping in his tracks the moment he saw them, burning bright red at the sight, inside and out. And she just had to prod at that, just to see. She rolls over now, hiding her rapidly warming face in the pillow. What the hell am I doing? A memory of Steve rises unbidden, face flushed and eyes a little panicked as he leaned over her, his neck a hard line of muscle so close to her face, to her mouth. The part of Chrissy that is a monster now wonders absently if maybe he would taste good too. God, she needs to think about something else. Luckily, she is brought out of her thoughts as Eddie comes wandering down the hall, rubbing his hair down roughly with a towel, hot steam escaping from the open bathroom door behind him. She wonders idly if she should get out of the bed. They had shared it last night, sure, but maybe she shouldn't assume? He doesn't comment on it, though, only smiles at her as he goes to deposit the towel on one of his chairs, tying his hair up loosely at the back of his neck. The bite she left is almost invisible now, only a faint line of white scarring on already pale skin. The soft black sleep shorts he's wearing are similar to the ones she's borrowed, elastic only just strong enough to keep them from falling off her hips. It should feel strange, probably, to lie in his bed and wear his clothes, with no words said of what they actually are to each other. But all she feels is comfortable. Safe. He sits down on the bed next to her, legs wide over the edge of the mattress, as she turns to face him, pulling the blankets up to her chin. "Hey, princess," he says, tilting his head back to look at her, water still dripping from the front of his bangs. "Hi."
"You good?"
She nods, smiling into the blanket. It's nice having someone check in on her. "You?"
"Yeah, you were right. I really needed that shower. I think I brought about half the forest home via my hair alone,"
he says, flicking a piece of said hair for emphasis, sending a few drops flying. It makes her smile, the ease of which he talks about last night. Like maybe he really, truly doesn't blame her for what she did. It's late, and the silence that lingers feels natural in the darkened room. Chrissy wonders if his ears are picking up the same sounds of ice and water as hers do. If his eyes see the same twinkles of lights as they hit the frosted window. Though bound together by the transformation they both went through, there are still things that make the two of them different, and she wants to know all of it, know all of him. When he speaks again, though, he goes straight for the question she had hoped he wouldn't ask.
"So, are we going to talk about your little stunt in the bathroom earlier?"
"Stunt?" she starts, schooling her face into the best innocent look she can manage. His raised eyebrow makes it clear he sees straight through it, though. "Well, it was worth a shot." Sitting up slightly, letting the blanket pool around her shoulders, she clears her throat. "Hey, have you been able to sense emotions at all? Like mine or Steve's since last night?" He looks surprised at the sudden change of topic, opening his mouth, before closing it again, a thoughtful look on his face.
No. I think I would definitely have noticed that. Wait, should I have?"
She doesn't answer for a moment, floundering for words, and luckily, he catches up before she has to.
"Wait, are you saying... what, you can read my mind?"
He sounds so incredulous at that, it's kind of funny. "Not exactly. I just feel your stronger emotions sometimes. It's kind of like a scent," she finishes with a shrug.
"Oh, huh."
He nods, takes a moment, then drops his face into his hands with a laugh.
"I guess I won't be able to hide anything from you then, huh?"
"Sorry," she tries, but he just shakes his head, hand ruffling her hair playfully.
"It's all good, princess. Not your fault. Wait."
He stops his movement, hand still resting on top of her hair.
"So when I came in and you guys were in the bathroom, you sensed what I... and then you..."
He's in full gesticulation mode now, fingers pointing accusatorily back and forth between them.
"You did that on purpose."
"I got curious. I'm sorry," she says, feeling her cheeks redden under his gaze.
"My God, Chrissy, you really are a freak like me."
Collapsing onto his back next to her, he sends her a grin,
though his eyes are still a little disbelieving, a little impressed.
I didn't think you had it in you.
Neither did I, to be honest, she answers with a shaky laugh, collapsing next to him in a similar motion. He takes a moment, shaking his head and smiling to himself, before finally turning toward her once more.
Right. Okay. Since you already know the most basic of my embarrassing urges, you must give me a chance to explain myself.
She nods, but he's already moving on.
However, this is truly my deepest, darkest secret, so I will need your most solemn vow that you will not tell a soul.
She giggles, rolling her eyes.
Cross my heart. Okay, so maybe in the past, yours truly has had a thing for a popular kid or two. The kind of people I definitely,
he swipes his hand decisively in the air,
definitely couldn't have.
Even the mean ones?
Especially the mean ones. Thank God, Harrington used to be the exact right amount of mean.
He says with a sigh, hand coming to rest behind his head. Chrissy takes the information in slowly, though she kind of already knew. Knew that the swirling heat surrounding Eddie wasn't there for her alone.
I liked him better later, when he got nice, she says,
hoping her admission is clear between the lines.
Because you are a smarter woman than me, Chrissy Cunningham,
he says, turning to face her so he can boop her nose.
A smarter woman indeed.
Her face falls a little then, as Jason's presence hovers in the air around them, whispering,
No, she isn't. She walked right into my arms and let me take and take until there was almost nothing left.
She mentally shakes herself, pushes him away, far away, to whatever hospital bed he's lying in, shattered and unconscious and utterly ruined because she made him that way.
Good. He has no place here now.
Rallying herself, she looks at Eddie again. He looks soft in the low light, soft and safe, and like he could be hers, if only she asked in the right way. He's so different now, though, Steve, she says instead, because she needs to ask this, too. What do you think about him now? Eddie rolls over to his back again at that, arms splayed across his eyes as he laughs.
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it? The truth is, Chrissy, my sweet, that I think this Steve Harrington, the guy that all the kids in my D&D group adore, who works minimum wage jobs proudly, who is returning in the morning with goddamn diner pancakes because you said you liked the smell and I dared him to get me the biggest stack his rich parents could afford, I think that guy is finally, truly dangerous.
Oh?
Yes, because mean old King Steve, I can sigh at from afar, you understand. Laugh at with the boys and have sexy daydreams about and never, ever get close to. This guy, though? He's so... so...
nice.
Exactly! He is far too approachable now, far too easy to tease, and God, have you seen how that boy blushes? That's real, actual trouble, that.
She giggles again. Can't help herself.
I can't believe we used to have a crush on the same guy.
It happens to the best of us, sweetheart.
Besides, I think half of Hawkins would agree that that guy is a total smoke show.
Yeah, I think they see him differently than we do, though.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
They're quiet for a while after that, the energy gone from the conversation as they both consider the things they have just learned. She should feel embarrassed, ashamed, probably, of the things she's just admitted to. But Eddie's easy acceptance makes it so simple to just, well, accept them. To look at this other part of her that she's hidden away for so long and go, hey, I see you. She's not sure what it means yet to embrace her inner freak, so to speak, but it's a little exciting. Suddenly needing to scratch an itch, Chrissy shifts, her leg unintentionally sliding against Eddie's as she does, and the touch of skin against skin makes her shiver. At first, it seems like Eddie doesn't really notice, because he doesn't move, doesn't react at all. But then, she feels it again, the warm haze from before. A soft, bright heat that slowly makes itself known in patterns like smoke, swirling in the air around them, enveloping them both. She looks over at him then, and his face flushes as he meets her gaze. You can feel that, huh? He asks quietly, and she nods. It makes him try to pull away, face a little sheepish as he mumbles, sorry, but she puts a hand on his shoulder, stopping him in his tracks. Don't be, she says, shuffling herself up on one arm, looking down on him, so similar to the way they had been that very morning. Only this time, her actions aren't led by the monstrous wish to take, to drink, to taste. Instead, there is another more human wish in her mind as she reaches out tentatively, moving the still damp hair out of his eyes. His lips part as he watches her, the heat swirling into a crescendo around them. When they speak again, their voices are barely above a whisper. Hey, Eddie?
Yeah?
Can I kiss you?
Please.
He licks his lips, nodding. And she leans down, finally, finally, touching her lips against his. Eddie kisses like he does everything around her, soft, enthusiastic, and following her lead. It's such a far cry from the kind of kisses she's had before, where boys would kiss like they had something to prove, pushing her lips as hard as they could against her teeth, crowding her into whatever surface they could find. Here, Eddie gives her space to experiment, to move her face gently one direction or another, finding the angle that feels the best. Lets her push her tongue gently along the seam of his lips, opening them slightly at her insistence, tasting the difference of what lies inside. In her peripheral vision, his hands are moving now, fluttering around her as if unsure of what they're allowed to do, where they're allowed to touch. Pulling back from the kiss, she can't help but smile at him as she grabs his hands, intertwining her fingers with his. On a whim, she tightens her hands around his, pushing them up and down above his head, effectively pinning him in place. So, am I mean enough for you yet? She asks, and in seconds, he goes from dazed to shocked to helplessly grinning back at her, eyes dancing with laughter.
God, what am I gonna do with you, Chrissy Cunningham? He asks.
And she shrugs, leaning down to press a kiss to his nose. I'm sure we can figure something out. The next morning, Eddie finds himself once more in the back of Steve Harrington's car. This time, he is neither bleeding nor unconscious, so that's something, but it still feels weird. Like any moment now, he's going to wake up and realize it was all a dream.
He's been feeling like that a lot lately. Maybe if it had just been the monster part, it would be easier. Being different is nothing new to him, after all. Maybe if it had been only him that was turned, he could have figured it out. Taken some anger management classes, stayed away from hospitals, told everyone he's been working out. Anything else he could probably slip under the radar is just Eddie the Freak being, you know, a freak. It's what he does. Sure, the ever-present hunger that lingers in the back of his throat, no matter how much he eats, is a worry. But as long as he can keep the monster calm, keep it pleased, it isn't that bad of a companion, only sending him occasional sensations, urges, ones that he can easily ignore. Anyway, the problem is, there is a lot more to this than Eddie's new status as a creature of the night. And a bunch of it is good. And it's not like Eddie hasn't had good things in his life before. Music, D&D, the godsend that is his uncle, etc. But there had been other things, too. Things that came and went so fast, Eddie hadn't even had time to really appreciate them until they were already gone. So he doesn't think that it's strange, really, that new good things in his life leave him suspicious, always waiting for that other shoe to drop. It had been easier to believe that it was real last night, as Chrissy pulled the blankets over them, holding him close and kissing his nose with a smile. Easier this morning, as Steve arrived early with the promised baked goods and fragrant coffee and a genuine smile there just for them. But here, in the back of the unfamiliar car, the frosty morning light far too bright in his sensitive eyes, it starts to grate at him. Like they've taken the step back through the wardrobe, leaving Narnia and all its wonders behind. And it's not that Eddie doesn't think they have a good reason to go. He shudders to think what chaos it would bring if the citizens of Hawkins started turning undead left, right, and center. It's just, well, he's never really seen himself as a hero. Sure, he loves a good hero's journey story as much as the next nerd, but putting himself in those shoes? Nah, doesn't feel right. People like Steve, with his perfect hair and perfect face and perfect charm, could step into that role naturally. Save the world, get the girl, whatever. But people like Eddie? Nerds, freaks, and queers? Well, they were the sidekicks at best, the bad guy more often than not. And he worries that now that they've left the comfortable bubble of his trailer, Chrissy and Steve will remember that. Remember who they really are, and forget why they even cared about him in the first place. It wouldn't be the first time Eddie had hoped too much, asked for too much, and found himself alone as he picked up the pieces. You know you have abandonment issues when that scares you more than turning into an actual blood-sucking monster, he thinks, a small smile playing at his lips. Ah, what a mess. You okay back there, Eddie? Steve asks, shaking Eddie from his thoughts. He wonders when he stopped being just Munson to the guy. It feels nice. Oh, I'm fine, Stevie. Just slowly dying from your terrible music taste. The nickname comes out by accident, but Steve doesn't seem to mind. Like, sure, he flips him off, but he's smiling, too, so that's fine with Eddie. It's not that he really minds Madonna that much, but it's the principle of the thing, right? He's got his metalhead cred to uphold. In the rearview mirror, Steve's eyes linger on Eddie's for a moment, widening in surprise for a split second, before returning to the road. What? Do I have something on my face? Looking down, he quickly realizes the reason for Steve's surprise. He'd been scratching at his neck absentmindedly, moving his hair aside as he did so, no doubt revealing the rather impressive hickey Chrissy had left there last night. Oops. His face heats slightly at the memory of it. They hadn't even gone that far. And it's not like Eddie hasn't made out with anyone before, but... Well, when he had imagined indulging in his masochistic side, it hadn't been with the cutest cheerleader in school. That's for sure. But God, if she hadn't been perfect, getting him all riled up, acting as if she would bite him, only to leave him with sweet kisses, with an edge just there enough to make him want more. And Hickey is just the perfect side of sore. He would say that she's going to be the death of him, but, well, that might be in poor taste. In front, Chrissy shifts slightly in her seat, sending him a stern look, clearly able to sense where his thoughts are going. He gives her a shrug and an apologetic grin. He's got an active imagination, and it's far too late to apologize for it. Besides, despite his insecurities still hovering at the back of his mind, it does help that she is currently rocking one of his favorite long-sleeve Metallica tees. They had gone through pretty much every inch of Eddie's closet and under bed storage, but in the end, they had managed to cobble together a pretty good outfit for her. His tightest jeans, rolled up at the ankle and tied at the waist with one of Eddie's black scarves, makes for a good look, and the chunky knit black cardigan is one of Eddie's favorites on days like this, so he knows she's toasty in it. They even found her a baseball cap to keep the worst of the daylight out of her eyes. All that black makes the red in her hair stand out, and she looks so much like his, it makes his chest tighten. As his eyes wander back to Steve, where his fingers are drumming along to Madonna on the steering wheel, and he wonders, despite himself, what Steve might look like in the same set of clothes. What? You think just because you corrupted one jock, another would be easy? His anxiety asks, and he reels himself back, sternly. Don't be greedy. Outside the window, the houses get taller, fancier, and it brings with it a familiar unease. He never really goes up this way, unless he's dealing, and it's often a toss-up on whether the money is worth the bullshit that comes along with this type of clientele. Plus, last time he did, well, it hadn't ended very well, had it? Somewhere in an alternate universe where vampires didn't exist, maybe Chrissy would have just died. Maybe Jason's attempt at putting the blame on Eddie would have worked. The thought makes him shiver. Mikey, amateur chemist and peddler of unsavory goods, lives all the way up Forest Road, which is lucky. Like the name suggests, it follows along the side of the woods, like an asphalt boundary between civilization and nature. So it's not difficult finding a spot out of view to stash the Beamer before they make their way up the road on foot. The house sits on a corner, garden surrounding all sides, so they're able to saddle up without alerting themselves to any neighbors. As they make their way down the garden path to Mikey's back door, Chrissy gives his hand a gentle squeeze, probably able to sense the discomfort that's radiating from him. It's not like it's a bad plan. Not really. He's hung out at Mikey's before once or twice. Similar interests and all that. He never really liked the guy, to be honest. Always hanging after the most popular kid of the month, scraping up every ounce of popularity he could gain by osmosis. But he had been a good contact in those early days. Knew just who would be looking to buy, where the deepest pockets were. It hadn't been the most fun of Eddie's life, exactly, but it had been a profitable one. Anyway,
He remembers the back door well enough.
Remembers that the lock is so basic he could pick it in his sleep.
He also knows that Mikey's parents are always out during the day, working long hours in their fancy office jobs. And with Mikey off at school, as break-ins go, it should be a piece of cake. Get in, grab the stuff, get out. And hopefully, that'll be the end of the sudden and violent outbreak of vampirism in Hawkins, Indiana. It's a plan his old man would be proud of, he realizes with a grimace.
Complicated breeds complicated,
the man had always said.
Sometimes the best way to hit the nail is just a fucking hammer.
Ironic, considering the guy is currently in jail for robbing a hardware store. Anyway, he doesn't want to think about him now. This whole breaking and entering scenario is already far too close to following in the man's footsteps. It's a simple plan. A good one, even. And like any good plan of Eddie's, it falls apart almost immediately. He's only just gotten his lockpick out, crouching in front of the door. Steve hovering as Chrissy keeps a lookout, when he hears the creaking sound of footsteps from the other side. Wait, there's someone, is all he manages to whisper before the door swings open in his face, causing him to fall back, landing hard on the garden tiles. Looking up, there is the unmistakable shape of Mikey, very much at home, staring him down. Fuck. Stay the fuck back, Mikey says, voice breaking slightly as he speaks. He's always been a tall guy, not as athletic as his jock friends, and he towers over Eddie now, his hair wild and eyes sunken, like maybe he hasn't slept in days. What is more pressing, however, is the large-ass kitchen knife he's holding, pointing straight at Eddie's face.
Whoa, Mikey,
Eddie starts, but the guy is not listening, eyes panicked and knife shaking in his hands.
Munson, thought you might show up,
he says, licking his lips nervously as he clearly tries to muster up some bravado.
I don't know how you did it, freak, but I'm not going down like Jason did, so back the fuck up.
Suddenly, Eddie remembers the fact that Mikey had been the one to find Carver, who brought him to the hospital.
Yeah, that probably explains the state he's in. Hey, sorry to burst your blame the freak bubble, buddy, but I didn't do shit to Jason.
That was me, Chrissy says from behind him, voice clear. She looks unnaturally still, where she stands just behind Steve, eyes shaded under the baseball cap except for two points of orange light, right in the center of her eyes. At the sight of her, all the blood leaves Mikey's face. Oh yeah, he probably hasn't seen her since...
No, you're dead, I saw you,
he says, panicked, and Chrissy nods, taking a step forward. Shoulders up, eyes clear as she approaches. Eddie takes advantage of the moment to scramble back, out of the reach of the knife.
You saw what?
She asks, and there's an echo to her voice now, as if two voices intertwined.
Saw me bleeding out on the ground as you ran away?
In her mouth, Eddie can see her canines elongating with every word.
Fuck.
This is spiraling out of control and quickly. He shares a glance with Steve, who takes a step forward, blocking Chrissy's path as he does so.
Brave,
Eddie's instincts tell him from somewhere deep down.
Brave, but stupid.
Hey, Mikey, right? Steve says, one hand stretched out toward each of them, as if calming a pair of wild animals.
Let's talk this over, okay? We aren't here to hurt you. Just get away from me, you freaks! Mikey yells, clearly not open to negotiations, and shit, this is going to start drawing attention. Attention that they cannot afford. Under Steve's foot, some of the gravel gives way, and he stumbles forward, and Mikey, already on high alert, panics. He slashes wildly, knife in hand, and Eddie watches as if in slow motion. As Steve tries to right himself, tries to get out of range, but he's too slow, too unbalanced. And Eddie, damn him, is still sitting on the ground, too far away to react, to do anything. But then Chrissy is right there, shielding Steve with her body, and for a moment, Eddie feels relieved. Because Steve, squishy, human Steve, is going to be okay. And then the knife finishes its arc, slicing into Chrissy's thigh through denim and flesh. The smell of her blood as it is spilled burns straight through Eddie like fire and ice. And the curl of heat and anger at the base of his spine awakens with a roar, wrenching Eddie's control out of his grasp, and he...
You shouldn't have done that,
he hears himself say, voice distorted and weird to his ears, as he watches his nails grow long, the skin blackening around his fingers as they twist and shape themselves into talons, scratching at the ground. In his mouth, his teeth grow large, sharp, and his eyes feel different as he watches every little particle of dust and dirt in the air around him become clearer as time seems to slow once more. The one who hurt his master is running now, knife forgotten on the ground, and he can feel the vibrations as his prey's shoes hit the linoleum floor, stumbling down the wooden stairs and onto the concrete floor of the garage beyond. He barely has to tense a muscle to move, his body light and strong and fast as he begins the hunt. Distantly, he hears someone call his name, but the pumping of his blood is too loud in his ears, the hunt too strong in his veins. He is down the corridor in seconds, legs pushing off of the wall as he takes the corner, landing on all fours below the steps, snarl in his mouth as he goes. The heartbeat of his prey is loud in the space beyond, full of devices made of plastic, metal, and glass that shatter as his prey passes, knocking them over as he goes. It's easy to take a leap up, up and over the debris before he lands on his target. Soft flesh, easy to push to the ground, to dig sharp talons into. Grasping human hands try to pull themselves free, scrambling for purchase on metal rods holding up a shelf. And the monster thinks, that's a good idea, actually, and rips the shelving out of the wall, stepping back as it falls onto the prey. It squishes him to the ground, though not quite heavy enough, not to hurt in the way he really wants. Leaping up, he sits himself on top of the metal, pushing down with his body weight. That's better. One of the slats are on top of the adversary's throat, on his windpipe, and the monster knows that if he pushes down just so... Eddie, stop! Comes a voice from behind him. It is not the voice of his master. He does not have to do as it says. And yet, its source is important somehow. It pulls on the monster's instincts just enough to make it still, tilting its head to listen. Good, that's good. Just stay like that for me, okay? The voice says, as its owner steps into his field of view. The monster stays, curious, and the important one looks like he approves. The monster preens a little. For some reason... It wants to be good for this human who isn't quite prey. Wants to know how he will be rewarded if he is. The human leans over, speaks to the prey. Come on, Mikey. Just tell me where you keep the moonshine. The black stuff. And all the spores you use, too. Because if you don't... He looks up. So the monster wiggles his weight a little, causing the prey to groan under the weight of it. The important one smiles, pleased, and the monster preens once more. The prey mumbles out some instructions to the important one, but the monster isn't paying attention. He is being good, he is being useful to the important one, so he keeps holding still. The important one disappears from view for a moment, and Eddie wants to watch, wants to follow him with his eyes, but he remains still, remains good. When he returns to the prey once more. Okay, Mikey, here's what's going to happen. We are going to leave, and we are going to take this. He holds up several bottles, black liquid sloshing around inside of one, black spores gently swirl around in the other. And you are going to forget any of this ever happened. Because if you don't... He looks up at Eddie, who basks in the attention. I won't be here to stop him next time. Underneath him, the prey nods as forcefully as he can, whispering out promises after promises, groveling for the important one. Pathetic, the monster that is Eddie thinks. We could do better. The important one reaches out a hand to Eddie, his eyes insistent as he asks him to step down. The monster doesn't really want to. Still enjoying the power he has over the creature that hurt his master. But he is just about to get in, to step down, when a new smell hits his nose. Warm, soft, and enticing, and he sniffs the air, trying to find the source. Finally, he spots his reward. A small cut at the very top of the important human's forehead, where a small trickle of red is making its way down, down along his eyebrow to his cheek. It smells delicious. Steve's doing his best. He really is. Chrissy had yelled at him, "I'm fine, just go." And here he was, negotiating with a monster, threatening Mikey like he has any fucking idea what he's doing, and reaching a hand out like it's the most natural thing in the world, asking a monster to leave with him. But it's not over yet. And as he follows Eddie's gaze, Stave's body finally alerts him to the light burn along his forehead. And as he wipes at the gentle itch on his eyebrow, his hand comes away red. Shit. Just out of focus, beyond his hand, he can see the two glowing points of orange get closer as Eddie climbs his way down the metal shelving, ignoring the groans of the man still trapped below. He knows there's no point in running, not after how fast he saw the guy move before. No point in fighting if the bent metal bars holding Mikey down are anything to go by. He keeps his eyes fixed on his hand, unable to move, as the shadow of Eddie crowds into his space, similar in height, but stronger in presence. This is it, he thinks. He is going to bite me. His whole body tenses, but he does not move. Cannot move. He wonders how much it will hurt as the teeth sink into his neck. Remembers the faraway look in Eddie's face as he had talked about Chrissy biting him. Steve had wondered if maybe it had been good, too. Closing his eyes, he holds his breath and waits. But the pressure against his neck never comes. Instead, he feels a soft, wet caress as Eddie's tongue follows the trickle from his eyebrow and up, up,
before moving gently over the cut, only eliciting a small hiss from him at the contact. Opening his eyes, he sees the gentle glow of Eddie's eyes dim as he pulls back. Slowly, the animalistic features of his body retract, leaving him with just regular old Eddie. All leather and denim and crazy hair, sure, but still just Eddie. "Fuck. Sorry, dude," he croaks out, licking his lips with a wince. "I didn't mean to,
Okay,
Steve says, voice faint. He touches his forehead in wonderment once more, looks at his fingers, now completely free of blood.
That's okay, man.
Eddie gives him a look, then. Hands gripping his hair on both sides of his face, and eyebrows shooting up to the sky, clearly stating, "What the fuck, Steve?" without saying a word. And it's so very human, so very Eddie, that Steve has to stifle a laugh. Behind him, another piece of lab equipment falls to the ground with a crash, causing both of them to jump.
"Shit, we should get out of here. Somebody probably heard Olive."
He gestures vaguely to the absolute state of mayhem the room is in.
"That."
They leave the smashed laboratory as it is, Eddie only flipping the shelving unit off of Mikey's bruised body as an afterthought, before leaving without so much as a look.
Somehow, Steve doubts he's going to be any trouble moving forward.
They make their way up the stairs again, at a more reasonable pace this time, and Eddie's eyes linger on the claw marks on the wall like he barely remembers making them. Maybe he doesn't. His leather jacket is hanging low off of one shoulder, and as he walks behind him, Steve can see Eddie's skin through rips and tears on the back of the shirt. For a moment earlier, he had sworn he saw movement under there, like something trying to break out of the skin right along his shoulder blades. They reach the garden once more, and Steve is about to hold up the bottles in triumph, tell her it's all good, we got it, let's go. But something is wrong. She's still sitting where he had left her, just minutes before, after she had told him, "I'm fine, just go." But she doesn't look fine now. Instead of the beautiful, quiet, but determined girl he has gotten to know in the last couple of days, he sees someone scared, pale and sallow, and desperately trying to keep pressure against a heavily bleeding thigh where she sits, hunched over in the frosty grass. "Chrissy," he breathes out, starting to run. "Fuck, why hasn't it healed? Yesterday, when they were making dinner, she'd cut herself, just a light graze, and it had healed over instantly, before Steve had even been able to react. So why isn't it now?" As they get to her, Eddie lightning fast, and Steve as quickly as he can, she smiles at them weakly, hands still pressed against the wound in her thigh, red and dripping into the frosty grass. Immediately, Steve takes off his jacket, bunching it up and holding it out for her to use to push against the wound. "Sorry," she says, voice weak. "I guess I..." Her voice drops into a groan as Eddie puts his hands under her, lifting her up into his arms as he stands. "I guess it was a little worse than it looked." "It's okay, sweetheart. Let's get you out of here," Eddie mumbles, but his voice betrays his words of comfort. The panic is palpable in his face as he meets Steve's eyes, so Steve does what he does best in a crisis. Acts. Working in tandem, Eddie carries Chrissy as Steve runs ahead, checking that the course is clear before nodding to them to follow, the street a little blurry around his eyes as the adrenaline pumps in his ears. God, he shouldn't have left her there. Stupid. "You're not healing.
Eddie says, voice tense, high, as he carries her down the road, clearly trying his best not to jostle her more than necessary. Why aren't you healing? I don't know, Chrissy answers, and her voice is desperate, scared. I've been feeling weaker all morning, but I have no idea why. My stupid stomach still won't let me eat, and I don't know how else I can... She trails off. But Steve knows, suddenly. Knows with startling clarity what she needs. Shit. Okay. Come on, I'll drive you to mine. I've got tourniquets and stuff in my first aid kit, he says, leaving the truth for later. Just keep the pressure on, he babbles, as he helps Eddie into the back seat. Chrissy is still grasping tightly in his arms. Their eyes meet for a moment before Steve slams the door shut, and he thinks that Eddie probably knows, too. Some of the worst driving of his life later, they pull up to his house. And luckily, none of his neighbors are about, because this is definitely not one of those things he could just explain away. Not that he cares, really, at this moment, because Chrissy has become shaky, complaining that she is cold. And Steve wants to bet that this is a very bad sign. He rushes them into the downstairs bathroom, grabbing blankets and pillows on the way, arranging them on the floor so Eddie can put her down, get her wrapped up as best he can, in an attempt to keep her warm. From under the sink, he pulls out the large first aid kit that he bought after his first bout with the Upside Down, the one that hasn't seen use since Star Court, and starts rummaging around. Taking out bandages and disinfectants, he sets them up on the floor next to Chrissy, along with several towels, one of which he hands to Eddie to replace the now blood-soaked jacket. Eddie, he says, forcing him to look up, to focus on Steve for a moment. I think we both know this stuff isn't going to be enough. Yeah, she needs blood, Eddie agrees with a nod. Okay, just give me a sec, Steve says, starting to pull at the sleeve of his polo, before Eddie stops him with a hand on his shoulder. Wait, let me go first, he says, voice soft but certain. You sure? I mean, what's the worst that could happen? I've already died once, Eddie says, going for jovial, but it falls flat, neither of them finding it funny. Steve shakes his head, but drops his hand from his sleeve. It's a good idea. Eddie is probably less likely to get lasting damage, all things considered. But he's not happy about it. It means all he gets to do is watch and hope. Well, someone he cares about puts themselves on the line, and that is the worst feeling he knows. Gently lifting Chrissy up into his lap, Eddie hands over the job of maintaining pressure against the wound to Steve. Carefully, he brings her face up to his neck, arching his head back, giving her access. Chrissy, who had been teetering on the brink of unconsciousness, comes alive against him, fingernails growing long once more as they dig into his arms, one coming up against his neck, and though Steve can't see it from this angle, the soft groan that is punched out of Eddie is enough for Steve to know that she is connected. That she's bitten down. Next to her thigh, Eddie's hand twitches on the ground. And without thinking, Steve takes it, letting Eddie squeeze him as he winces, pain clear on his face. It's okay, Eddie. Just hold on, he whispers, grounding himself in the press of Eddie's hand and Chrissy's warm thigh under his hand. Please, please work. Slowly, slowly, Chrissy's skin starts to look better. The muscles in her arms flex as her strength seems to return, and she rises up a little, no longer relying on Eddie's arm to hold her up. It's working, Steve exclaims, as he watches the change in wonder, hand flexing around Eddie's. In his chest, the knot of panic finally starts to unravel. Thank fuck, Eddie whispers, slumping back against the bathtub behind him. His dark hair is a wild contrast against the flat, bright porcelain, and his long eyelashes flutter closed as Chrissy follows, pushing deeper. A soft moan escapes his lips, and Steve? Steve holds onto his hand because he can't let go. Can't tear his eyes away as a blissed-out expression appears on Eddie's face. It looks soft like this. Black and white and pink as the flush spreads along his cheeks, mouth opening slightly as he gives himself over to the sensation, and it's like nothing Steve's ever seen. Beautiful, his mind supplies, and he is too tired, too scared to push back at the thought, to put it with the others, deep in the pit of denial that he has been digging for far too long. Instead, he just holds on tight and allows himself to watch. Slowly, the grip on his hand loosens, and as Eddie's face goes slack, Steve, all out of free hands, leans his face against Chrissy's shoulder, wills her to listen with all that he's got. Chrissy, it's time to stop now, he says gently, and she stiffens beneath him. Please. She doesn't, not immediately, but the muscles on her arms untense one by one. Slowly, she pulls her face back, body moving to slump backwards into Steve, and he goes with it, letting her fall back so she can look up at him. Her mouth is red, like she's been kissed, but the dark tint of her tongue as she opens tells a different story. Above her, Eddie draws a shaky breath, giving Steve a weak thumbs up when he sends him a worried look. Okay. Okay. Slowly, he helps Chrissy up, props her against the side of the bath, side by side with Eddie, so he can check her wound. It looks much better, much smaller, and as he cleans it with the disinfectant, only causing her to hiss slightly at the touch, the blood is seeping out at a much slower pace. Finally, he looks up, taking in the monsters that he's let into his home, into his life, and they look rough. Like they've spent the last month lost in some underground cave, half starved and exhausted. It's better. Nobody is actively dying, he's pretty sure. But also, you need more, don't you? He asks, looking at Chrissy, who nods with a grimace. Just a little more, she says, voice hoarse. And Steve doesn't need any more encouragement than that. His mind has been made up, if he's completely honest with himself, ever since Eddie had turned his glowing eyes on him back in the lab. Okay, my turn, he says, this time taking off his shirt quickly, not leaving any room for protests. When he approaches, though, Chrissy is still shaking her head. I can't. Steve, my control is. I don't think it's strong enough right now. It was hard enough letting go of Eddie, and I've already. She doesn't finish that sentence, just shakes her head. If I bite you now, I might take all of it. Right. So, plan B then. In that case. He turns, faces the man next to her, who's only just coming back to himself, pupils still a little wide. Eddie, I need you to bite me. What? No, he starts, but Steve won't hear it, talking over him. You'll stop him if he goes too far, won't you, Chrissy?
Yeah, I think I can do that, she whispers,
and that's good enough for Steve. Swallowing, He turns back to Eddie. So, you drink for me, then give it to her? Steve! Hey, I trust you. Both of you. So let's do this. He takes the time to look at them both in turn, willing them to see that he means this, believes this. And in the end, Eddie is the one who breaks first. Shit, okay. Come here, he says. And Steve's face burns a little at that. He's not sure how to go about this, where to place himself, but Eddie just takes him by the hand and gently pulls him toward him, until he has to put his legs on either side of Eddie, effectively straddling him. Steve hovers there, not quite able to commit to resting his weight on Eddie, because that would be too much somehow. And it's not that Steve regrets his decision, not at all, but he feels a little dizzy with Eddie so close. With the heat radiating up from his thighs and into Steve's, his lidded eyes already glowing faintly, and his face so close. Swallowing, Steve turns to look at Chrissy. Her eyes dark as she looks at them. An intensity there that feels familiar, but he can't quite place. Carefully, she reaches out, takes Steve's free hand, and it's both grounding and overwhelming at the same time. She nods at him encouragingly, and he answers with a tight smile. He can do this. Then he feels Eddie's breath against his neck. And fuck, that's... He takes a deep breath, and for the second time that day, Steve closes his eyes in surrender. The pain is sharp at first, teeth breaking skin, going deep. He hisses with it, tensing around Eddie's hand in his left, Chrissy's hand in his right. Slowly, as Eddie retracts the fangs again, the sharp pain gives way to a duller one. Eddie's lips close around the wound, sucking gently at first, and then with more urgency, as he pulls more and more blood out of Steve and into himself. Without warning, the pain gives way almost completely to an overwhelming feeling of pleasure that has Steve reeling, knees slipping on the tiles, depositing him directly into Eddie's lap. He grunts at the force of it, but Steve barely registers it because he's overwhelmed, breath ragged and mouth falling open with noises he is definitely going to be embarrassed about later, but right now he doesn't care. Because he just feels so goddamn good. What feels like ages later, but also not long enough, he hears Chrissy's voice next to his ear. Eddie, enough, she says, warning in her voice. And Steve whines, because he's not ready to leave this feeling. Not yet. Swallowing, Eddie pulls more, hands still tight in Steve's, and... Wait, that's not right. A spike of fear breaks through Steve's haze of pleasure because Eddie hasn't stopped. Chrissy had told him, had asked him to stop, and he hadn't. And that is bad. Steve struggles to remember why exactly, but it is... And he's just about to do something, he's not sure what, when the pressure on his neck finally starts to subside. Relief and disappointment floods his system, and a sigh rises unbidden as Eddie pulls back. His eyes are still glowing, mouth still full of Steve's blood. And instead of swallowing, he turns to Chrissy, cradling her face, pulling her towards him, and...
and kisses the blood, Steve's blood, into her mouth. Steve watches, dazed, as she opens for him, allowing it in, licking every last drop out of Eddie's mouth. And Steve is still right there, still holding their hands, still sitting in Eddie's lap, heart still pounding loudly in his head. He doesn't even know if it's from fear or arousal anymore. Just knows that he needs more of this, whatever it is. And that he never, ever wants to let it go. God, he is so screwed.
The end.
Arthur's Nuts. I think I have one more part in me for this one. If my demisexual heart will finally allow me to write this mutt that I had planned from the damn start. Reader's Nuts. I love it. I love it. I love the shotgunning blood of it all. I'm sorry, but I had a very formative impact of Buffy on my life, and shotgunning blood from one partner to another in your threesome is, in fact, the most amazing thing that you could have put in this AU. Thank you, Misty Sharks, for giving that to me. I didn't know I needed it, but I woke up and I wanted it. Yeah, everything about this is beautiful. And I had one recording blooper that I thought was particularly funny, aggravating, whatever. Anyway. The truth is, Chrissy, my sweet, that I think this Steve Harrington, the guy that all the kids in my D&D group adore, who works minimum wage jobs proudly, who is returning in the morning with goddamn diner pancakes because you said you liked the smell and I dared him to get me the biggest stack his rich parents could afford, I think that guy is finally truly dangerous. I can't do this. 1, 2, 3 fucking 4 lines of sentence, Eddie. When do you breathe? And, yeah. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. There's one more part in the series right now after this. Have a nice day. She says,